is The Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Shaw Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It is Sunday morning, and you know what that means. It is time for The Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara alongside Shaw Ali. Let's go, baby. Baseball is back. We're going to talk a lot of fantasy baseball. We got to move quick. Folks, we got to move quick. Baseball season is going to be here before we know it. So top of the hour, next hour, we're going to be getting into our pitching fantasy draft strategy. Then our guy at 9:30 Eastern, Gary Thorne, fantasy baseball writer for DraftKings. He is an encyclopedia, the professor of fantasy baseball at 9:30. Before that, there is a ton of NFL news. We'll dive all into that. Our Fantasy Wrestling Listener League begins today. We are going to tell you all about that and who won from the AEW Revolution Pick'em pizza contest that we had a week ago. But Show, listen, spring forward is never a fun time, my man. Our listeners are probably like, why is that awful man yelling at us an hour earlier on the radio today? How are you?
It's true. It's true. I'm glad you went there first. Oh, I know. Exactly. That's exactly how I felt when I woke up this morning to a T. Yeah. I don't like to complain too much, but it's time to abolish daylight savings time, Andy.
Amen.
Okay? You know what? Whoever whoever's responsibility that is, I don't know if it's the federal government, the provincial, the municipal, I don't really care. It's time to do away with daylight savings time once and for all.
It's that, but you know what? Now, at least, since you went this one, give us the fallback. Like, do it after the fallback. Give me that one. I'll take the 1 more hour extra sleep.
Yes.
Can they just keep falling back so that eventually days will start? It'll be like 2 a.m. and it'll just be like, fall back. It'll get back to where it has to be eventually. I know it's dumb.
Funny?
I don't understand.
I went to go get one of my relatives last night. They were coming back from the airport. And I picked them up. I took them home. I came back home. I did my notes. And it was like pretty late, right? Like, I didn't get back home until like 1 a.m. our time. And I was like, I have plenty of time, right? So I took my time. I did some of my notes. And I looked over the clock. I swear, I looked over the clock at 1:59, okay? And I'm like, it's like pretty late. I should go to bed. And like 5 minutes later, I looked back at the clock. And it was like 3:02. And I'm like, what on earth? Am I in the twilight zone? Like, what
happened? And then that just kicks you right in the pants, that one.
Yep.
I know the idea, I think, was behind like farming or something, where it's like, you got an extra hour, but it's like, you just leave it alone, because then you're just either in the dark a little bit longer, or it's light a bit. Oh, who cares? Like, I don't understand the big deal. Show, it's gonna be dark a little while longer, and we're just deal with it. I don't understand.
I don't get it either. Oh, well, that's okay. You know what? I'm glad we're on the same page on this. I'm glad we're both okay with abolishing daylight savings time.
That's right. Boo. Whoever's responsible. Boo earns. Hate it. But, Show, you know what? Let's get into this NFL stuff, man. Man. This, like, does it not feel like it was a month ago now with all the news that Aaron Rodgers signed that mega extension?
Yeah.
Like,
it seems
like last season. Like, it's like... Say, oh, yeah, that's really old news. Highest paid QB in the NFL. So, as he's known sometimes on social media, Karen Rodgers, the ever whining, complaining. but he is really good at throwing the football, and he gets paid a lot of money to do so. So you put up with the whining, complaining, the toe stuff and whatever else he does. Aaron Rodgers looks like he should be finishing his career with the Green Bay Packers, a 4-year extension.
Yeah, I think it was something like, and he denied signing it, right? But at same time,
of course he did.
And of course he did, and you know, it's just kind of par for the course with Aaron Rodgers. It was like the news was broken by Adam Schefter and the other insiders, and then like an hour later it was coming out that he was denying it. Then he went on Pat McAfee's show, his pal, and then he was like, I didn't sign an extension, but I will. And it's like, okay, then who cares then? If you're going to sign it in like 2 hours, who cares, right? So it was something like I think it was $200 million over 4 years, and it was $153 million guaranteed money, which would make him the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Because like you always say, always look at the guaranteed money. And even though the NFL is weird and the cap can be manipulated, it feels like more than most other sports. Aaron Rodgers getting $153 million guaranteed over four seasons is a lot of money. Like, my goodness, that is a lot of money. But hey, you know what? We'll talk about the Russell Wilson thing in a second, but you know, a lot of the conversation around Aaron Rodgers was maybe he'll go to Denver. And all I could think of was, you know what? Why would Aaron Rodgers want to leave playing the Vikings, who either have Kirk Cousins or maybe no QB, depending on what happens with Kirk Cousins, the Lions, who have Jared Goff, and the Bears, who are still learning with a new coach and all the Justin Fields stuff? Why would you want to leave that and go play a division that has Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert in it? Like, why would you want to go do that, right? So even if they're just going to flame out in the second or third round of the NFC playoffs, if that happens, you know what? You may as well get paid a ton of money to do it.
Well, yeah, or if you don't get the bye, maybe the first.
Yeah, yeah.
Who knows, right? Like, it doesn't, just like we said in the last playoffs, it's nothing specifically you can necessarily put your finger on from statistics, science, what sabermetric, whatever you want to call it. There's nothing really you can point to as to why the Green Bay Packers will screw up in the playoffs, but they just do, right? It's like it just does. For whatever reason, it just does. But totally, that's what we were saying before show. It's why at this, you're in your very, very late 30s. Why would you want to make your life super difficult compared to strolling, a casual hands-in-the-pocket stroll to a division title that, barring injury to yourself in Aaron Rodgers, is virtually guaranteed.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you think we see Jordan Love on a different team this year?
I think we see Jordan Love sitting his butt on the Packers bench and having his first-round contract expire, the fifth year not being picked up, and just whatever front office guy decided on that pick should be publicly shamed for that awful pick. And that might have cost the Packers a chance at a championship, wasting that pick on Jordan Love.
I hope, like, I swear there's nothing I want more to happen than for this year, for like this extension news to be true with Rodgers, and then in like a month's time when the NFL draft comes around, for them to pick another quarterback in the first round. That'd be so good. I would die for the Twitter reaction. Honest to God, I would.
You know what? If they do, we're going to both get whatever quarterback that is, their Packers jersey, and we'll wear it. Right, yep.
Okay.
This is the guy. What a wasteful front office. And they did it the same with Brett Favre. Like, okay, granted, listen, being from a team that has not won a Super Bowl, I would take one and then, you know, just be on my way. That's fine. But the fact that you had Brett Favre and then you transitioned right into Aaron Rodgers, and you only have one Super Bowl from each, I think is a complete waste of what you could have been dynasty-wise. Again, you know, if you're a Packers fan, you're taking the two Super Bowls, obviously, but it just seems like a wasted opportunity year after year, and this is a draft that is really deep on the defensive line, and it's really deep at receiver. It would be great for the Packers if you got one of those big-bodied guys like we were talking about, you know, to compliment Davante Adams. Fantasy-wise show, I think it's really business as usual when we're talking about the Packers now, right?
Yeah, I would think so, right? You know what trade I would love to see happen? And maybe if you want to get to this now, we can. But now that Amari Cooper is on the Cleveland Browns, the news had come out yesterday, like right afterwards, makes sense, right? But right afterwards that Jarvis Landry was being allowed to seek a trade, and I'm sure they would rather trade him, much like the Cowboys did to the Browns. I'm sure the Browns would love to recoup, like, you know, a late round draft pick for trading Jarvis Landry instead of just like cutting him outright, right? Mm-hmm. So a part of me kind of wonders, and you know, it seems with the salary Landry is owed, maybe he will just get cut outright and then sign with another team for much less. But I would love to see Jarvis Landry play with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. I think that would be awesome. Like, especially if Davante Adams is the guy down the field, like the intermediate to deep routes, and we know he's going to force feed Davante Adams the ball anyways. But in the red zone, especially because the Packers, like, they don't really use tight ends. Like, I know there was that one year with our pal Tunyon, but Funyan Tunyon came right back down to earth last year, right?
Yeah.
And you and I talked about it. It wasn't great, injuries and so on. But you know, with the there was no real tight end to really pick up the slack, really. And I would, man, I think it would be really cool to see Jarvis Landry kind of occupy that move the chains type of role, like the kind of Juju Smith-Schuster role mm-hmm. or the Julian Edelman type of role. I think that role would be cool to see Jarvis Landry occupy. It's just, you know, that's like that's a fantasy land, fantasy trade, right? But that would still be pretty cool.
Well, and it's the last year of his contract. Now, he's currently owed with roster bonus and salary, all this, $16.379,412. That's a lot of coin for a guy who caught four touchdowns and has been banged up at 30 years old. And I was going to say the Packers would be restrained to do that show because of the salary cap, but as we saw with Matt Ryan and everything else, it's just like, now it's a signing bonus. It's like, what? But he already signed. Yeah, it's you know, it's not a problem anymore. It just waved off. It's like the salary cap, like Matt Ryan, the most ridiculous salary cap hit in NFL history, and now it's okay.
It's crazy to me that Matt Ryan is getting, like, his salary cap is like $48 million or something, and he, like, the actual money he is going to get in the year 2022 is going to probably like half that, if that, right? He's getting like I mean, he's still getting a lot of money. It's just comparatively speaking, because they kicked the can down the road for so many years, and he already got a lot of that money, he's just not going to be, like, it's just not going to be a, he's not getting $48 million this year is basically what I'm saying, right? So like you said, the salary cap both does, it's like Schrodinger's salary cap. It both does and does not exist.
Right, at the same time. It's there, but as long as you have a somewhat competent salary cap guy, you can really get around it. The Landry thing is interesting to seek a trade. I bet you he just ends up getting cut with that probably. Salary and somebody reconstructs. Yeah. What about going back to Miami? You know?
I can see that. Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense. He's not, it's a new regime and all that, but yeah, Jarvis still has he's certainly very useful. He's a great locker room guy. He's certainly helped change the culture with the Browns. And now it's just time to go. He's just not producing the way he was. So, you know, you get him in for a $5-6 million couple year deal, and he's probably going to retire in a couple years, and that's it. But Amari Cooper coming. Woo, baby. I was very excited about that. Hopefully he doesn't have a social media savvy father like the last diva wideout that was in town to create clips, but my poor Baker Mayfield. Amari Cooper's a heck of a talent. I'm excited.
From what we know of history, because as we all know, time is a flat circle, things repeat themselves, history is cyclical, Andy. In 3 years, Amari Cooper will force his way out to the eventual Super Bowl champion. That's what I know.
Well, you know what? As long as two of those previous years are the Browns being Super Bowl champions, I'm fine with that show. I'm fine with that. That's okay. I think that move, because of the salary and the Browns cleared out Odell's one, and Jarvis, obviously, I think will be cut. And we'll talk about the Cowboy impact about this in a sec too. But Amari Cooper, about $20 million. What that does is it allows for a true, and by all accounts, Amari Cooper is a pretty quiet guy. Like he's not a diva-ish in your Odell Beckham Jr. style and not a maniac in that sense. So I love what he's been able to do. Fantasy-wise, we've talked about it. This guy has been as steady a WR2 type seemingly forever. So you put him in, my guy, you know I love him. I'm going to say it, Donovan Peoples-Jones, folks, DPJ, you know I love him. On the other side.
Stop it.
With David Njoku upping, and I still think this is what happens. The Browns now will draft the best defensive player at 13, swing back in that deep wide receiver class, get who I'm hoping, fingers crossed, one of my combine crushes, Christian Watson. You get a 6'4 guy, and you take a bit of the pressure off Cooper in a run-first offense with a rejuvenated and extra motivated and healthy Baker Mayfield. I don't know. I'm not going to have Amari Cooper as my first receiver off the board, obviously, show. But if I have him on my roster to start with let's say a starting point of my WR3 with a WR2 ceiling if things go well, yeah, I think you can get him for a bargain.
Okay, you know what? That's fair. Because I feel like you just can't, by the nature of the Cleveland offense, you just can't expect the statistics you've gotten from Amari Cooper in the past couple of, even going back to his Oakland days, right? Like, you just can't expect that level of production. It's certainly possible. It's not impossible, right? It's because everything breaks right. The Cleveland offense is humming, and then obviously Amari Cooper is paid. He's getting like $20+ million each of the next 3 years, so he's being paid to be one of the best receivers in the NFL. He could very well produce like it. It's just that we know they love to run the ball. That's just how they do it. We talk about it all the time. It's not really to do with Baker, really. It's just if that's what they do again, then it's just going to be less volume, and volume is king, and all that kind of stuff, right? So. Yeah, but I think you're right. Like, if you're taking him as your third wide receiver on your team and you hope for some more upside, yeah, I think that's valid, right? It's not like he's going to completely disappear. He's not going to be barring injury, obviously, because, you know, injuries are freak accidents or whatever. But barring injury, I don't think it's reasonable to assume that someone who has been as talented as Amari Cooper is suddenly going to be like a WR5 or something like that, right? So I think that's totally valid when it comes to the viewpoint of Amari Cooper. But I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, now that Russell Wilson, for example, is in Denver, wouldn't you take basically every wide receiver in Denver over Amari Cooper now?
I would take Cortland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy for sure.
Who's the other guy? Tim. Like, I might even take Tim Patrick, honestly.
I believe KJ Hamler out of the slot. I want to see how. See, and you know, that's a good point. So let's circle back to Amari Cooper and his impact from leaving Dallas in a moment. But that Russell Wilson conversation, where now that we have a new tier one QB with the talent at wide receiver, now shall we have to start wrapping our head around and trying to figure out, and it's something we won't know until we see and hear reports at a training camp, is who's his favorite guy? Who is Russell Wilson's guy? Every QB's got a guy, right? Who does he mesh with? Is it Jeudy? Is it Sutton? Is it Tim Patrick? Somebody else we don't know? Right? What does that look like? Because we can see there's all the talent in the world there, but is there a favorite? Is there a distribution? How pass heavy do they want to go? You still have Javonte Williams in the backfield. I would think Melvin Gordon leaves because of the Wilson salary, and this becomes Williams' backfield. So what does that offense now look like in the AFC West? I think once we sort of get an idea of maybe some direction there, show, that's going to be very interesting to see where you take those guys. Because, listen, you can make the argument for any one of those three guys being the top wideout in Denver.
It's true. No, it's true. I was just thinking while you were saying that, I was just thinking, because obviously Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton will be in some fashion, you would imagine, unless something really crazy happens in training camp and Russell Wilson has some kind of insane connection with Tim Patrick, you would think that Sutton and Jeudy will be this, like, the Denver version of DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, right? It's just, I don't know, you don't really know right now who is who, right? Is Sutton the Metcalf one, or is Jeudy Metcalf, or vice versa, right? I'm not entirely sure. Like you said, we'll have to wait until training camp to see. I think they'll both be relatively relevant, I guess, in the Denver offensive scene. You know, so obviously Albert Okwuegbunam, who is now the de facto number one tight end now that Noah Fant kind of went off with our pal Drew Locke to Seattle. And by the way, just as a quick aside, imagine being Noah Fant, thinking to yourself, oh, sick, I'm going to get to play with Russell Wilson. This is awesome. Oh, what's that? I'm also being traded to Seattle? Oh, no.
No. With who? Drew Locke? No.
Drew, I didn't want to. I thought he was going to get cut. No, no.
Oh, please.
Yeah, that I read that. I was like, oh, that's brutal.
Right, well, it's like, well, there goes another tight end. All right.
Yeah. But hey, we all better learn to say Albert Okwuegbunam real fast, Andy. Look, it's also possible to draft someone, but I feel like given he's been pretty productive with like pretty awful quarterbacks the past several years. So, hey, I mean, if he is even decently good, and we saw what Gerald Everett looked like, and we've seen Jimmy Graham in the past, and I'm not saying he's those guys, but, you know, clearly Russell Wilson likes to use the tight end. So I think Albert O will be a popular waiver, not waiver, but a popular riser in the draft come August and September.
Right, and like we talk about, you can be a average tight end and
true.
Still be a top 12 fantasy tight end.
Yeah.
You can get yourself 8 fantasy points a game show and be a top 12 guy. That doesn't mean you like it, but,
yeah.
You know, that's what it is. And so let's swing to the Seattle side. So Wilson leaves. What does that do to the fantasy value? Oh, my. Of my guy, DK Metcalf. Oh, no. Oh, no. You know, though, it is not going to be Drew Lock. This Seattle, with this deal, as soon as this deal was done, show, I'm like, there is absolutely no freaking way, unless we hear that they are tearing this team down to the studs, and with a 71-year-old Pete Carroll, despite how gorgeous he still looks as an old man, there's no way that guy wants a rebuild at that age, which means there is no way. It is impossible, show, that you're going into next season with your quarterback room looking like Drew Lock, Geno Smith, and Jacob Eason. No way. That means you're drafting a guy. The question is, who did the Seahawks fall in love with at the combine, through the pre-draft process? Who do they love? Who are they going to draft? That's the question, because it's going to be that guy who, if he's not a day one starter, judging by that QB room, is going to be the sooner than later starter in Seattle.
Part of me kind of wonders if the team that might be tearing it down to the studs are the Vikings in the end, or maybe not like completely to the studs, but, you know, to whatever level is right above that, because, you know, I've seen some chatter, and we'll see how real this is, because the draft, I feel like, is the biggest, like, the trades will come fast and furious right up until the draft, right? And then the draft will happen, and then they'll probably be like a little while where there are no trades, just because the trades usually involve draft picks, and obviously once the draft is over, we'll have to wait until next year. So I think if the Vikings haven't traded Kirk Cousins by the draft, then this point is moot. But if they do, couldn't you easily see the Vikings just sending Kirk off to Seattle? I mean, I could for sure see that, just so the new regime has like a fresh start, right? Like, I could easily see that. I mean, I could also easily see Kirk staying. He's been like perfectly fine, right? Maybe even a little above average. You probably wouldn't know it based on the Vikings record, but he's been like fine, right? I just, you know, there's a lot of other problems with that team, and he's not going to necessarily win you games, and he might lose you some games, but yeah, the Kirk Cousins line, wherever it is probably like a straight line. It's not a lot of deviation, I feel like.
No.
But Denver's pick in the first round was the 9th overall pick, and that's what Seattle has now. So, I mean, they could easily trade that pick for a veteran QB, or they could just pick like a Malik Willis or a Kenny Pickett or someone like that.
You can see when his tiny baby hands. Poor Kenny. I just think of like the South Park with Cartman. Kenny. Little Kenny Pickett. Oh, boy. But you're right. The 9 spot, I'm looking at the draft order here. So the 9 spot is a really good one to be in for Seattle, taking that place of Denver. Because you have above them Atlanta. Could they take a quarterback to replace Matt Ryan? Maybe. Is this the year to do it? Maybe not. New York Giants above them. They have 2 picks. Giants have the 5th and 7th. Now, do the Giants just take 2 players? Do they bundle? Do they love a guy over Daniel Jones? Again, new regime. The dinosaur David Gettleman era is over. Do they find somebody? The Jets aren't taking a QB. Houston just is, I don't know what to think. They're just run by kindergarten children, it seems. They're crazy. Detroit, could they take a quarterback, or do they take their best available guy? You know, like, so what I mean is, show, you're probably going to have a pretty good look at the QB you might want at that 9 spot, or, you know, maybe use something else to move up a bit. I don't know. But it's that's going to be interesting for Seattle, because right now, that fantasy value for Metcalf and Lockett, I don't, like, it's not like I don't want them on my team, but I want, like, somebody else to take them so I don't have to decide on taking them, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's going to be one of those things where, like, it's going to be the beginning of the third round, and DK Metcalf is going to be staring you in the face, and you're going to be like,
oh.
You're going to be like, how bad could it be? You'll take him.
I don't want to.
And they'll be like, what's going to happen is whoever that, no matter who it is, right? The DK Metcalf pick in the third or fourth round is going to be something like, You know, it's going to be like the remember the Julio Jones years where he would be good. He would be like okay to good for like most of the year, but then he'd have like a 45-point night in 1 week, mm-hmm. and then like 5 weeks later have another 45-point night. And you're thinking to yourself, "This is the greatest thing ever. I'm a genius for taking Julio." And then like the very next week, it'll be like an 8-point outing. That's exactly what you're going to get from DK Metcalf, but like maybe worse. Like worse in the splits probably.
Yeah, it sucks. It really does for the talent of DK Metcalf. And now if we swing all the way back from the Amari Cooper to the Browns trade, that frees up room right now on the Dallas Cowboys fantasy-wise. Because they thought, well, okay, and they're trying to restructure some offensive line money and stuff like that as well. They're thinking, well, we got $20 million, so we can either pay Amari or use that same money and probably still for less re-sign Michael Gallup and was it Cedric Wilson and have those two guys go alongside CeeDee Lamb as the number one with Dalton Schultz's emergence last year. I'm not saying you don't want an Amari Cooper type, you do, but if you have to cut a little bit, I think that Dallas offense can be just fine without Amari Cooper, and you re-up your own guys. You can give both of them a raise. You can sign both of them and still be under that $20 million mark. I think it's a smart move from the Dallas side, and it really bumps up CeeDee Lamb to that next WR1 level. Like he should be primed to be a top, I don't know, top 7, 5, depending, wide receiver.
You would hope so. You definitely. I mean, if you're Dallas and you're a Dak Prescott owner in fantasy, you really hope he does, right? Because if he doesn't, then, like, you know, the Dallas offense struggled to start the year last year, and you might see some struggles again this year, you know, as they adjust to the post-Amari Cooper world. Because I said this to you last week when they were discussing trading him at the Combine and so on. Amari Cooper, that is. I just, you know, you look at the Dallas red zone and you know, even with, generally speaking, the Dallas offense without Cooper, because he missed a couple games, right? You look at their offense without Cooper. It wasn't bad, right? Because the Dallas offense, even when it's bad, is still pretty good, right? But at the same time, it just kind of it fizzled out a little more. There were more three and outs. There were more long drives that ended in field goals instead of touchdowns. And you know, I just a lot of those games did have Michael Gallup healthy because I think he tore the ACL in the very last week of the season, right? In week 18, I think it was, or week 17, week 18. So. I think he'll be great when he comes back because he's a very good player. It's just I do legitimately have some concerns about the Dallas offense without Amari Cooper, which makes me think that maybe Dallas might be one of those teams that is primed to take one of these big time, like, you know, maybe in the first two or three rounds, take a wide receiver. Like, you were talking about, like, the Christian Watsons and the Chris Olaves of the world. And this is if there was ever a year to get a good wide receiver, this is probably it, right? So I feel like, you know, it may not be like a Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase type of pick they're making here, but whoever they can get to pair with CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, and Dalton Schultz in that receiver pass catcher room, I think would do wonders for CeeDee Lamb's fantasy value. It would do wonders for Dalton Schultz, who I think is the clear winner, I think, even more than CeeDee Lamb. I think the clear winner is Dalton Schultz because Dak Prescott loves looking for that guy in the red zone. Like, there was, even beyond Amari Cooper, the next most targeted guy in the red zone was Dalton Schultz, right? Mm-hmm. So, if with Cooper gone, you would think some of those targets go to Dalton Schultz's way even more. So I love him. He has to be owned by everyone in draft this year. I'm going to be very high on the Dalton Schultz pick when we do our tight end previews in you know, in August or something like that. But boy, that's one thing. And another thing, Andy, real quick, is that if anything proves that you should again not pay running backs, it is this, because at least a part of them dealing away Amari Cooper is because they are still stuck with a gigantic Ezekiel Elliott contract.
Yeah. And at this point, Zeke still put up RB1 numbers, right? But back end, like 8, 9, 10, which is still the question is going to be now with how much Tony Pollard was mixed in last year, that is going to have a real question mark as to where you want to be taking a Zeke Elliott. And I'm with you. I can see Dallas second, third round. Like, there's talk you could get starting, depending on the situation, starting level wide receivers at least through round two and possibly into round three. Yeah. So Dallas has the luxury of being able to take maybe a bit of a raw guy who they like. Is it a a smaller, zippy slot receiver? Is it a big body dude for down the field? Like, you can, there is so much variety in this NFL draft when it comes to wide receivers. You can really just pick how you want it to go. And so I'm very interested to see how that goes. Khalil Mack traded to the Chargers. That's a really tasty pairing with Bosa on that other side. Now, both guys have had some injury issues lately, but that is clearly, to me, a move that says, okay, we're in the AFC West. We got Mahomes. For the Chargers, we have Herbert. Russell Wilson coming to town. We need another guy on that edge to try to create havoc for these elite-level quarterbacks.
Yeah, Khalil Mack, I you were texting me this when we saw the trade go down a couple of days ago, that a large part of the reason for his low return for the Bears is probably because of the salary. And I mean, he's also been injured, right? Like, I think it's funny to think that for a player that we in our minds think of as one of the premier players of his generation, really, right? Because, like, Khalil Mack is just a freak, right? Mm-hmm. But he has been injured a lot, like, especially in the last couple of years, especially in his Bears tenure. He has been injured a lot, right?
So,
yeah, so I don't know. I feel like it's very possible it goes very well, but this is probably a big reason for why, yeah, the Chargers didn't have to cough up a lot for him in the first place. But yeah, Joey Bosa, Khalil Mack, and dare I say, you mentioned it earlier, you mentioned it for the Browns. I could easily see the Chargers doing the same thing, you know, taking the two of them and pairing them with, like, the best available pass rusher on the board, a Jordan Davis, maybe, like we were talking about, or a Trayvon Walker, maybe. Ooh. Who knows, right? Like, just you pair those two with someone who is very good up the middle, and then you just let them loose on whoever the Chargers are playing, right? Especially if you're playing in the same division as Russell Wilson and Patrick Mahomes, and you could probably add Derek Carr to a lesser extent in that conversation. Like, you want those quarterbacks to be under duress all the time.
Yes.
If you're the Chargers. So you might as well go all out, right? Why not?
And especially with Khalil Mack, 31 years old, it never hurts to have a rotation guy, right? Even if you wait on it and you pick maybe a more raw pass rusher who you can develop behind those guys. So it's a big defensive signing for the Chargers with that type of salary coming the other way. Deshaun Watson, of course, cleared of criminal charges. Now, there's all the civil stuff that could still happen. And now, if we look at it just from a football side, this is fascinating because Deshaun Watson has that no-trade clause. He's been said that he wants, you know, the rumors to Miami. But you know what else is in Florida, show, is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And they have a ready-to-go to a championship-run roster. Right now, right here, right now, they need a quarterback. You got Blaine Gabbert staring you in the face. just like with Seattle, there's no way Drew Lock's starting this season. No way. No way that Blaine Gabbert. Again, I will say impossible. A few things are impossible in life, Joe. That is an impossibility that they will decide as Blaine Gabbert as their first choice. Impossible. So what does that look like for Tampa Bay with Deshaun Watson? If they feel they are ready to truly make with that roster, and you wouldn't put a franchise tag on Chris Godwin if you didn't have championship aspirations still, why would you not say, okay, we'll trade XYZ to the Texans for Deshaun Watson and get him in and go on another run? You can do that today and make yourself right back in that Super Bowl conversation.
I could definitely see that happening. The problem is, I could also see it happening for, like, every other quarterback needy team in the NFL, right? Like, I could see Watson.
Deshaun
going
gets to decide. He gets to decide, though.
That is true. That is very true, right? Because we had seen he has the no trade clause. We had seen, I guess it was yesterday. Time is a flat circle, like I said, Andy. They all blend together. It was either yesterday or it was Friday. But in the past couple of days, Deshaun Watson apparently was being pursued very heavily by the Panthers. The Saints were involved.
Yep.
You know, there's a whole bunch of them, right? So I could see him going anywhere. You're right, though. He will eventually essentially pick his destination. But, I mean, you know, if the Panthers give up just a boatload of picks for him and the Buccaneers are like, yeah, you take a first rounder and see what you know what I mean? Like, I feel like the Texans will probably just hold on to him, essentially, right? So I do think we see him play football at some point this year. I just am not entirely sure. You know, again, we have until the draft at the end of April to kind of see it happen. And I mean, look, if Russell Wilson can get traded to the Broncos, then you know what? really anything can happen, right? Because dare I say the Russell Wilson trade was probably the most momentous... Probably the biggest, most momentous trade of the past. It feels like, at least, I know this is recency bias and being a prisoner of the moment, but it definitely feels like of the last, like, 10 years almost.
Well, it's huge. It's a guy in his prime. He's won a championship going to a ready-made situation, right?
Yeah.
So it's going to be real interesting. Now, before we break, Tom Brady, show your guy. He might not be done yet, right?
Boy, I just if he plays in 2022, all of the feelings that everyone felt out of out of his retirement and like, oh, they didn't thank the Patriots on Instagram. Like, what's going on here? Yeah. It'll all be moot if he plays in 2022. Actually, we have a clip from Mike Florio. Florio is, of course, the founder of ProFootballTalk.com. He was on the Fan Morning Show with JD Blake and Justin Cuthbert. I think it was on Thursday. It was like the day after the big Russell Wilson news. So he came on to talk about all that stuff. And at the very end, JD asked him about, you know, what's going to happen? What are some other the QB carousel moves that are going to happen? He started by talking about Deshaun Watson and then finished with Brady. So why don't we hear this clip from Mike Florio from the Fan Morning Show?
I think the next one is Deshaun Watson. And the grand jury is going to consider the criminal complaints against him on Friday. There's hope from his camp that at the end of the day, there will be a decision not to indict him at all, and that's going to clear the way for him to be traded next week. The Panthers still interested. They were willing to do it last year before the grand jury had even gotten these claims on its radar screen, and the Panthers aren't troubled by the 22 pending civil lawsuits, and I've seen suggestion that Washington could be in it. I wouldn't be surprised if Philadelphia became interested in Deshaun Watson. He wasn't interested in them last year. He's got that no-trade clause. He wanted Miami last year very, very badly, and Miami wanted all 22 of the civil lawsuits to be settled before they would do the trade. Now I think it's incumbent on Deshaun Watson to take a step back and ask himself which teams in the NFC would he be willing to play for once he gets to the point where he can be traded, and that may be coming very soon. And the Brady thing is not – listen, the same instincts that led me to believe that Russell Wilson was in play. I firmly believe Tom Brady's going to play this year, that he's just biding his time. And it won't surprise me if he makes a play to get the Buccaneers to release him as of next Wednesday or after next Wednesday with a post-June 1 designation so they don't take a huge cap hit, but he becomes free and clear and able to plot his next move, because I really do think that he wants to play for the 49ers, and I continue to believe that's where he's going to end up. So watch Watson. Watch Brady, and keep an eye on Kyler Murray. Keep an eye on him, too. He's extending olive branches by putting the Cardinals back on his Instagram page, but the Cardinals aren't doing anything to pay him. His agent believes he should get a ton of money, and if the Cardinals aren't going to do it, don't be surprised if Murray starts agitating for a trade out of Arizona.
Ooh, boy. Spicy stuff there, Show.
Andy, would you take Kyler Murray? Talk about Tom Brady in 2 seconds here, but would you take Kyler Murray on the Browns over Baker?
Absolutely not. Kyler Murray is downward trending, Show. We've seen it the last 2 years. He's starting not to be healthy.
He's a tiny little man
that he's shorter than Baker. Baker can't see over the line. How's 5'4" Kyler Murray going to do it? Good Lord.
How big are Kyler Murray's hands, I wonder?
I think if you have a newborn baby at home and you look at their hands, by the sounds of it, they're bigger than Kenny Pickett's. So they're bigger than Kenny. Poor Kenny.
Poor Kenny Pickett.
Poor Kenny. I don't even. Can he open like a jar? Can he hold his coffee mug? I don't know. I don't know what he can do. I don't know how he operates in life. But he somehow throws a football and does it pretty well. What the Tom Brady? Why would the Buccaneers just release him? Like, Brady, wouldn't you want to do right? Like, get, like, even a fourth-round pick or something for him to San Francisco, just get something back? Because that doesn't help the Buccaneers at all to release Brady and then let him go on his merry way. Like, what does that mean for Trey Lance?
The only reason they would do it, I think, is just because he's Tom Brady, essentially, right? Like, he's probably just like, please? And they're like, meh. Okay,
trade him for Jimmy Garoppolo. Go the other way.
Here's the thing. I genuinely think because like people, because I don't know if it's because of the recency bias, but I feel like people forget that he, which is crazy. It feels like a crazy thing to say, but you know, like that thing from Zoolander when Will Ferrell's like, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Like it feels like with Brady that people forget that he won the Super Bowl in Tampa. It's not like he was a scrub in Tampa. He was very good for 2 years, and he won them the ultimate trophy, right? So I feel like for that reason alone, if he just wants to be released, they'll do it. You know, because I will say that you get those notifications every week from the various insiders, especially the people who cover the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But you often see, like, they're like, ah, oh, this guy has been placed on the reserve/retired list. And they had the guard, Ali Marpet, I think his name was. He retired, very suddenly. He was, like, what, 28 or something like that. He retired very suddenly after, like, 3 or 4 years in the NFL. And, hey, you know what? If that's what is best for his health and so on, I applaud that. But the very next day after he made his announcement, the Buccaneers had put him on the reserve retired list. They still haven't done that to Tom Brady. He's still not on the reserve retired list. So, like you would think where there's smoke, there's fire. So I'm inclined to believe Florio here.
I think Marpet was like, wait, Brady's not coming back. Wait, it's Blaine Gabbert next? Yeah. You know, I'm good.
Trask? Oh, no.
I'm good. It's like, yeah, I'm cool. Don't worry about it. I will see y'all later. And he just like gets his head. He's like, yeah, Homer Simpson backing into the bush slowly and disappearing. Right. Like, not going to do that one. Yeah, the Brady thing is going to be very, very interesting. We got a lot of baseball talk coming up later, folks, as well. We got our guy Gary and Thorne from DraftKings in about just under an hour. We'll get to our pitching fantasy strategies, who we should be looking at now that the baseball will be played and we'll be back. But up next, fantasy wrestling, folks, from our buddies at dropthebelt.com. We are starting a listener league. We're going to tell you about that, how you can win pizza prizes potentially each week for fantasy wrestling. It's amazing. We'll talk about that next when the fantasy show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Show Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
We are back and rolling on the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Andy McNamara, that's me. That's Show Ali. Get us on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. Later on the program, we will be talking fantasy baseball. A lot of it. Gary and Thorne from DraftKings. Get you ready, folks. Baseball's coming real quick. So we got to get prepped for the fantasy baseball season. We're going to start that process in the next hour. However, Show, we talked about it last week. We got great response from it, and it is fantasy wrestling. Finally, we found a place that does fantasy wrestling, one, period, and two, at the most creative level. Our guys at dropthebelt.com. I absolutely am obsessed, Show, with this site. And we began it last week. We're going to have a listener league, but last week was the big AEW Revolution pay-per-view where we put out, hey, you know what? If you get the most predictions right, you're going to win a pizza prize, and we did our own predictions as well.
Right. So last week on the show, we didn't do, like, you and I think Santos did too, and we'll bring our producer, our technical producer, Santos, Josh Santos, into this conversation here now. But I don't know if, I know you did, Andy. Santos, did you also pick outside of the show picks? Because we just did 5 picks on the air, but did you also pick all of the other events at the Revolution event?
I did, but I'm not sure where I wrote that down.
Okay, no, that's fair. I was just curious. I was just curious.
I did very
because
well.
Because we did, yeah. I didn't write them down anywhere else as well. I just used the Drop the Belt website because they have like a little pick'em tab. You can like click and you can just like click the yes, like, you know, who's going to win or all the various matchups. So I did that too. But on last week's show, to wrap things up, we did just pick 5 picks. So the picks were, Santos went with Kingston, Danielson, CM Punk, Red Dragon, Adam Cole, and Andy. I was talking to Santos about this before the show, but I actually didn't realize you and I picked the exact same picks. I didn't realize that we did until I was tallying the results, because you went super in depth with your picks, and I was like, "Yeah, this is my pick," and I wasn't really paying attention.
It worked out the same.
Yeah, so you and I both picked Jericho, Danielson, CM Punk, Jurassic Express, and Adam Page. So of those 5, Santos went 2-5, and you and I went 3-5.
Ooh, and those are the only 2 I got wrong. I went overall in the pick'em pool 10 of 12. I actually finished second out of the whole pick'em pool on DropTheBelt.com.
All right, look, Andy, look, here's where I fall on that, okay? First of all, anytime you get 10 out of 12, I want 8 out of 12, just for comparison's sake.
Okay.
But anytime you go 10 out of 12, that is deserving of praise, absolutely.
Thank you.
At the same time, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you to the audience. Elite, baby.
I agree. But also, you're the wrestling guy. You should get 10 out of 12 right.
That's true.
You should get 12 out of 12 right, honestly. Oh, like, you know what? I make my Oscar picks every year. I'm the biggest movie guy. I have a movie podcast, all this stuff. I go to like my mom, and I'm like, hey, Mom, I got like 25 out of 26 Oscars right. She's like, eh, who cares? Because you should get them right. You should.
It's never good enough, Mom.
You, Andy, you should get 10 out of 12. You should have gotten more, frankly. Frankly, that I randomly picked mine, that I got 8 out of 12, I think that's more impressive.
It should be like, you go to the parents, like, what happened to the other two? Like, oh, it's never good enough. It's never good enough. Oh.
I'm actually really disappointed in myself that I only got two right of the five. I'm setting myself for that classic underdog return.
Ooh,
for the fantasy.
Come back.
If someone asks me, they're like, hey, show, does Santos like wrestling? I'm like, you know what? I don't know. He only got two out of five right. I don't know.
I don't know if he's ever seen it before. Can you tell it?
Wrestling?
I'm not sure. Wrestling?
That's the thing with the superstars, right?
Yeah, the superstars. You come back. But we also had a listener. We put out a call to the listener and say, hey, you know what? Tweet us, text us, whatever, your picks out of those five. Whoever gets the most right wins a pizza prize. We got to give it up to our guy at CoachFrank18. Coach Frank went perfect, guys. Wow. Better than us.
Wow.
And he even called his shot so much. Like, this was the equivalent of a squash match where it's just like, Wardlow takes on two guys, like the big wrestlers, they take on two, three guys and just pin him in 5 seconds. Coach Frank also called a bonus match with Wardlow winning the latter Face of the Revolution matchup. And he got that right, too. So he technically went six when we only asked for five. So Coach Frank is the winner of the pizza prize.
Are we sure he doesn't work for AEW?
I cannot confirm
that
or deny that. It might be Tony Khan himself. I don't know. The matchmaker. I don't know. But what that means, guys, is we're going to put in with DropTheBelt.com, we're going to have our WrestleMania pick'em when we get closer to Mania. But they go in season. So it's pay-per-view to pay-per-view. So now we're going to do an AEW Fantasy Wrestling Listener League where we'll go from this week starting on Dynamite. So it's results from Dynamite and Rampage through to the next pay-per-view, which is at the end of May, Double or Nothing. And we put in a listener team. So we're creating stables or teams, whatever. And we made a listener team. So each week we'll have a different listener pick or make roster moves for their wrestling lineup. And if the listener team, who I've called the Outsiders, if they win that week, that person wins a pizza prize. Or at the end of the season, we're going to give away randomly to whoever played 5 Domino's pizza prizes to them just for playing.
Oh, there you go. I like that. That's a pretty good prize. Just all you have to do is text in your preferences for who is getting picked or drafted and played and so on. And it will remind people, when it happens. We'll remind them on the show. But that's not a bad prize, Andy. Do you want to tell me, because we still have to do the draft, right? We were going to do the draft
today,
and then we decided with all the news, we were just going to push it back. We're doing the draft tomorrow off the air, but do you want to kind of pick who you're looking at for your first round? Because you can go to the Drop the Belt website and find like the first, I think it's in pages of 20. So it's like the top 20 players by points if you look back to last season, right? So kind of like preseason rankings, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
And you can see them. So Sammy Guevara was the number one point getter last year by almost 100 points, actually, by a lot. He was 479
busy.
Points. Adam Cole in second place with 390 points. Jade Cargill, 374. Jungle Boy, 324. Wardlow, you're talking about, 302. You got someone in mind?
Well, when I'm looking at this, and you have to look at the point system because the Drop the Belt guys, I'm sure you guys have looked at the point system. It's so cool. Like, you get points if you're the first match out, or if you do an interview, or if you're backstage, or if you're in a specialty match or a title match. So I'm trying to think, okay, who wrestles a lot? Because it's not like, I would love to just say Jericho, but is Chris Jericho, for a first-round pick, going to wrestle every week and get me the most points? I would wager no, even though he started the Jericho Appreciation Society, which is a super cool swerve this past week. So I'm going to be looking at, guys, I'm going to be looking at possibly Wardlow because he wrestles all the time. He has the odd gimmick match with sort of squash stuff. He's going for a title this Wednesday at St. Patrick's Day Slam versus Scorpio Sky, the new TNT champ. So I'm going to think based on volume and the fact that he could become champ, I'll say Wardlow's my first guy.
Santos, who you have your eye on? Is there someone who, like, you know, I just mentioned Sammy Guevara is number one, Adam Cole, Jade Cargill, so on. Other guys in the top 20 are like Luchasaurus, CM Punk, Bryan Danielson, Britt Baker, Corey Rhodes. Is there someone you're looking at here for your first round pick, let's say?
Well, I mean, it's hard to ignore Adam Cole, baby. He's on TV every week. I think he's on Rampage as well. I think a good, like, especially this week, Scorpio Sky might be a good sleeper pick because he just won the TNT title. I don't know if it's going to be a I don't know if he's going to lose it this week or whatever, but I don't know if you'd want to pick him first, but he'd be a good, if you're feeling risky, if you're feeling like you want to, make a really risky pick. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, especially too, because if he doesn't lose to Wardlow, I could see him going on a bit of a run. Like if MJF interferes or something like that, then he could go on a run. That could be a savvy pick there, Santos.
I don't know about first pick, but.
No, but just in general. Yeah.
But like just a pick in general. If you're like, maybe you're on your final pick and he hasn't been taken yet, that might be a good final pick.
You take a look. Who you got your eye on, show?
That's a good question. I think, you know what, I think I might, I'm just looking at the list here. I think I'm, you know what, I'm going to go with Jade Cargill. I think if she's there, I might go with her. Solid. I think, I just love, I freely admit when I pick based on outfits and whether or not they've won.
And she's going to win the whole damn thing.
It's going to be my first year of football fantasy.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm gonna go with Jade Cargill. If not her, I do very much like the outfit of Luchasaurus, so I might go with him too.
Go with Lucha. Bryan Danielson's another one. He wrestles every week and is now teamed with Moxley and William Regal coming back in. To pick this week for the listener team, for the listener stable, the outsiders, will be Coach Frank, at Coach Frank 18. So he not only won the pizza, he will get the first selection of that. We also have, so we got a six-man league or six team league here, including the listener league, and we have the a couple of our friends from the business that are coming in. So Nick Alberga, our buddy, a wrestling junkie, his stable name is the Fuzzy Muzzies, for Golden Muzzy, that's his name. And then Andrew Hustler Patterson, our guy from Winnipeg Sports Talk, who's on Sportsnet, guest host out in our sister station in Calgary, he's on with the Kingdom. That's his stable name. The Kingdom is his name.
What's yours?
Five-man team. So five-man team. Mine is, I was going to try to do something Jericho-ish, but I thought, you know what? I've always loved the New World Order, and I love the Elite in AEW. So I called my stable the Elite World Order, baby.
There you go.
The Elite. What do you got, show? I sort of named yours. I don't know if you had another one.
No, well, you named mine the Showstoppers, which... You know, I was thinking about it when I looked at it. I kind of like it. Yeah, my typical like fantasy name is like It's Showtime. But you know what? I've used it so much. Maybe it's time for the Showstoppers to make an appearance.
You know, it's because it's clever, show, because your name is Show and it's Stoppers. And then it's like a Shawn Michaels to a Show.
Oh,
I get it now. But it's a wordplay, sure. Folks. Santos, what's yours?
I'm going with the Future Endeavors because I was thinking about drafting only ex-WWE guys. I'm not going to do that, but I just thought that was funny.
I like that. The Future Endeavors, sort of like the old job squad.
It was tough for me because usually in fantasy I'll name my team. Like I'll do the draft and then I'll pick one of the people. Usually I do fantasy hockey and I'll pick a player and then I'll pick my team name based around that player. And I'll try to find something clever. But because I haven't drafted anyone yet... It was tough coming up with the name.
Well, you know what, folks? That's your chance to play fantasy wrestling each week with us. So check out dropthebelt.com if you're a wrestling fan. I had stumbled across it a few months back, and it's awesome. This isn't a sponsor. They're not paying me to say that. I love it. It's really cool. And so we got the The league set up, Coach Frank at Coach Frank 18 is going to be the picker this week. If you want to be the selector of your wrestling stable for the contest next week to win some pizza prizes, make sure you're following us on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, and at The Fantasy Show. Drop the belts on social media as well. You can text in also if you want to be the selector of your team next week. But it's time for some fantasy baseball conversation. Baseball is back. That means fantasy baseball is also back, and we're going to get into it. We're going to look at some Blue Jay moves. We're going to look at some starting pitcher and relief pitcher rankings coming in to this season, and Gary and Thorne from DraftKings is going to help us tie all that together in the next hour when The Fantasy Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is The Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Show Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Hour two of The Fantasy Show kicking off right now across the Sportsnet Radio Network. Andy McNamara, Show Ali on Twitter at AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at The Fantasy Show. People's text line always open, 590-590. Name and location. We talked a lot of football off the top, fantasy wrestling. And now, Show, hallelujah. The baseball got out of their own way when it looked like they might not. They got out of their own way and said, yes, we will take all of your money. And we're getting a full baseball season.
Woo! Yeah, that's worthy of applause, I agree. It feels good. It feels good to be able to say baseball is back. Exactly. I don't know. I admit I was getting a little pessimistic that we weren't going to see a full 162. And, you know, is that the end of the world? No, but it just feels like baseball can never get out of its own way, like you said. And then they finally did. They agreed in a rare display of, I guess, I don't know if you want to call it dissent, but like, I guess it was kind of, right? Like the executive leadership of the players union voting one way, and then the rest of the players union representatives, including Ross Stripling for the Blue Jays, voting in favor. So as a result, we now have spring training starting today. If you follow the Blue Jays on Twitter, Jeez. They posted a bunch of pictures saying the spring training is starting right now. I think Hazel and the rest of the Sportsnet crew are down in Dunedin, and Hazel is posting pictures of like Danny Jansen arriving at spring training and so on earlier, like during the show. So that's always pretty cool. So, you know, obviously Sportsnet is going to have everyone covered when it comes to baseball. But whenever I think of baseball, Andy, okay, whenever I think of baseball, I texted you this immediately, like right after the deal was officially made whole again, let's say. The baseball was made whole as a sport. I thought of this, and I just wanted to play it because any excuse to play this clip from The Simpsons, I will take. So this is what I think of when I think of baseball is back.
Major League Baseball?
I told you they were monitoring my activities.
He's right. This thing's got info on everybody. Addresses, credit ratings, what size baseball hat they wear.
Surveillance beam disabled. Market research shutting down. Doesn't that beat all?
Hi, folks. I'm Mark McGuire.
Big Mac himself. Who'da thunk it?
Young Bart here was right. We are spying on you pretty much around the clock.
But why, Mr. McGuire?
Do you want to know the terrifying truth? Or do you want to see me sock a few dingers?
Dingers!
That's the best.
So good.
Suck a few dingers. Dingers! We don't care.
I like that he comes in on a helicopter, like immediately after the satellite like crashes to the ground, and he just goes, Bart's right. We have been spying on you pretty much around the clock.
Which is kind of probably true.
Probably.
Everyone's spying. So what?
Now,
let's see some dingers.
Now, Andy, now it's not like satellites. Now it's like smart speakers in your homes. That's what
Simpsons
it is.
Knows.
Yeah,
Simpsons
know.
I will maintain this. While there are, like, the Simpsons probably haven't been good really for like 20 years. The what they set and just the classic moments are untouchable. Just how they're able to just draw from the sports references to whatever, they are just able, those classics from seasons like 2 to like 14 are just unbeatable. I just love those so much. Oh my god,
that's fair. If we were allowed to play the Talkin' Softball song.
Oh.
I for sure would have come in with it. We obviously can't, but just like the
lousy
Mike
podcast.
Show says, tragic illness made us smile. Yeah. Like that stuff. It's so good. It's one of the best songs out there.
It's with Daryl Strawberry. Daryl, don't worry, it just rolls off their back and just that's the Steinbrenner stuff. And they actually had the real baseball players' voices involved with it. And so apparently what I learned was Jose Canseco, everybody else had fun with it. Mike Socha, all that. Everyone had fun with it. Wade Boggs, you got yourself a player, hops over the feds. But Jose Canseco was the only one that took themselves seriously. So they wanted to make a joke of it. But Jose was like, no, I want to be like a hero. So they went over the top with the episode. And that's why he was saving washing machines and out of burning houses, to sort of half make fun of them. Okay. To do it that way.
Man, if you also just kind of sort of related, but if you ever follow Jose Canseco on Twitter now, it is I'm talking now. He's probably tweeted several times today or last night. That is one of the wildest Twitter experiences, social media experiences you will truly ever experience. Honestly, it's like the complete opposite. If anyone ever followed Magic Johnson on Twitter, Magic Johnson, who won the Super Bowl last year? The Rams. And so he'll tweet something the Rams will win the Super Bowl, and his post-game tweet will be the Los Angeles Rams, the NFC champion Los Angeles Rams, just won the Super Bowl thanks to great performances by Matthew Stafford and Odell Beckham Jr. He'll tweet something like that, and then Jose Canseco will tweet something completely off the chain, almost the complete opposite. It's great.
It's I won the Super Bowl. This is what I'm looking for. I'm just looking at it. You can get Jose Canseco on Cameo.
Yeah, maybe we need to
do that. I'm sure he does. I'm sure he actually responds, unlike the Miami Dolphin player that didn't when I tried to get him as a nice gesture for our former producer Dan Marino.
Well, hey, look, at least you can live for the rest of your days with the Joe Thomas one, Andy.
I still have it. I have it on my phone and I have it on my computer. I love it. It was a tremendous birthday surprise, and I thank you very much. It was great. He never got me the season tickets though. I'm still waiting.
He never followed up.
he never followed up. It's okay. I still love Joe Thomas. And we definitely love The Simpsons, and we're going to love talking to Gary and Thorne, fantasy baseball writer and analyst for DraftKings, in about 15 minutes or so. But, Sho, now that you said it, listen, spring training, it began. It's kind of sprung up. It's okay, we got to go now because baseball's starting really soon. And that means that I'm sure all of you who are in fantasy baseball pools, you probably had a panicked message from your commissioner okay, when's the draft? We got to start preparing. So let's begin on the pitching side. And so if I compare this to, let's say, a fantasy football reference, the starting pitchers, the true aces, to me, match up with those ever-increasingly rare true RB1s in fantasy football. If you can get a true bell cow running back, you grab them. And I feel like that's how we've been getting the last couple of years in baseball. If you can get that true ace that might go five innings, and get you X number of strikeouts, you better grab them because those are becoming ever increasingly rare.
Yeah, yeah. I think when it comes to pitchers, we'll do the top 12 to 15. I have my top 15, and I just grab the next five names that I thought maybe might be in the top 20, right? But we'll talk about the 12 to 15 guys. But when it comes to pitchers, I almost feel like the better thing to do instead of saying it's guy one, guy two, guy three, etc. in order, and we'll still do that. But I almost feel like the better thing to do, the easier thing to kind of rank players is do tiers, right? A tier one. A tier two, a tier three, and you can still rank them, obviously, within your tiers. But I feel like there is a clear tier one, and then tier two are guys that could jump up to tier one, but maybe injuries or situation with how the bullpen is used and so on. Maybe those things are what's eventually going to be what keeps them out of tier one. Or hey, maybe things break right and they get into tier one anyways, right? So that's kind of how I looked at my top 12 to top 15 of starting pitchers, but I will say the top three guys. Again, I don't know if you have three different guys, but the
The top three for me, I went with Garrett Cole, Corbin Burns, and Brandon Woodruff. And the truth is, they were the three best pitchers last year. And I don't really see a major reason why, unless, again, barring injury, why they wouldn't be the top three this year.
I think when you – I'm definitely with you on Garrett Cole and Corbin Burns. Then you start getting into – and baseball's so tricky when you look at some of these older aces, those guys in the late 30s, because you're like, oh, man. Or like when – just like any sport, when does it turn? When is it not a good idea to draft those older players? I look at a guy like, let's say, Max Scherzer, who fantasy-wise, not depending on your league points-wise, but if you go by the CBS side – he was averaging 19.37 fantasy points a start. Okay, that's higher than Garrett Cole from a year ago. That's higher than Corbin Burns. Do I want to rely on Max Scherzer? I love Woodruff. You got Jacob DeGrom was there too, but we know what his injury history, right? Yeah. Walker Buehler. Are we like with the Dodgers? Like, oh, it's really interesting to see where you sort of group those guys in. What about Shane Bieber, who 2 years ago was a Cy Young winner? Where does he slide back in? Or do you look sort of at the really back end of that first tier to me, like an Aaron Nola, who I feel the show is more steady than is going to give you those real high pops in fantasy point days? One of those like maybe at the very back end of that first tier is like an Aaron Nola if you want to play it safe. Personally, I think depending where I draft in my different leagues, I might be looking to go ace with my first pick show.
Right.
Because I think that might be the way I go. Because you can find, especially outfield, I talk about this all the time. With outfield, you can go get, they're the wide receiver equivalent from fantasy football. You can get functional, off the waiver wire, consistent production, if you pay attention, from outfielders throughout the year. And I feel also with, like, let's say your fifth, depending on your league, is your three, four, five starter. You can have those sort of rotational guys in. But that ace, man, if you miss on that, I feel you're just going to be hitting the waiver wire all year.
I still think no matter who, like even if you want to take Garrett Cole, and I think so, we're in agreement that he's the number one guy, even at his age. And he had some issues in the immediate post sticky stuff era last year. And then he figured it out. Then he was, I know he didn't have the greatest end to the year, especially when he played the Blue Jays, but he was like fantasy wise, by and large, was still very good. Tons of strikeouts and he had the hamstring injury, but you know, if not for that, he probably would have hit the 200 inning mark. Right. And so on. So I'm still going with Cole number one, but even with Cole, I think I would still take, and we'll do the first and second base rankings next week. And there's 4 weeks, including today. There's four Sundays, I should say, before the season starts at the beginning of April. So we will get all the rankings for all the positions in before then. But just as a quick taste, I think I would still take guys like, I'm just thinking off the top of my head here, like Fernando Tatis Jr., Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Juan Soto, Bo Bichette, Ronald Acuna Jr., maybe Trey Turner. I'd probably take those six players, if I'm not doing math wrong and counting how many players I just said out loud incorrectly, but I'm taking those six players probably before I take a pitcher. And then if I have like the eighth pick and all those guys are gone, then I'll take Garrett Cole and Corbin Burns.
Right. And again, that all depends where you're drafting, right?
Like, Yeah.
If you have to weigh, all right, am I taking, when it's my turn to draft, am I taking the second best second baseman? Or do I take the best starting pitcher? Right. It's all that value. And then depends where you go on the turn for the second round. What could still be available there? Because the worst thing is you go through and you're like, oh, no, I forgot about shortstop. And then you're stuck. You're stuck with some rando, right? And then I always just try to build the most balanced team and at least try to hit. Now there's going to be situations where you find value, like, wow, I can't believe this guy's still here or whatever. Or maybe if you got your eye on like a real sleeper guy where you're like, oh, I want that guy. And maybe you reach because in your personal feelings or rankings, you want to make sure you get him. That's another situation. And you know me, Sho, I love my utility guys. I love when I see a player with like eight positional, you know, including like he hands out the popcorn. I'm like, oh yeah, I want.
Who was that last year? It was like Whit Merrifield last year. Was one of those guys?
Whit had a couple. Oh, who was it last year? There was
David Fletcher had a couple.
Fletcher, love Fletcher. That was it. Yeah, there was Fletcher. He had like four. There was there was a bunch. There was a bunch.
Moore.
I loved.
Yeah.
Moore. Yeah, Moore was there. The pitcher I really liked, and he paid off last year, at least the first part of the season, was Trevor Rogers of the Marlins. That was a guy I wanted and I targeted last year when we talked about it on the show, and he paid off. That's a guy that I look. I don't know if he's going to catch people off guard again this year, but that's again, somebody where you can get him probably a little bit later, and he's going to be one of those solid guys who, and he was striking out a lot of batters too, but you still want to get those elite guys. Like you can backfill. What do you always say, Sho? You're not going to win your league with the draft, but you could lose it.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
And do it that way. Like, so
you can, if you make like a really stupid pick, especially in the first, you know, two rounds, three rounds, it's not going to completely tank your season. But I mean, look, how many times have we talked about this in fantasy football, right? I mean, I'm sure there are examples over the past several years of guys who took Christian McCaffrey who won their league. But I mean, I'm sure there are just as many examples, if not more, of people who took Christian McCaffrey thinking they were set at running back, and then, you know, they never really recovered from that, right? Mm-hmm. So it's definitely possible. It just makes your job and your life much harder, right? So it just, you know, hitting on those first couple picks is that much more important. Real quick, I said Cole, Burns, Woodruff were my 1-2-3. I went with Zach Wheeler 4. I went with Walker Buehler 5. Scherzer and DeGrom at 6 and 7. And that's where I kind of draw the line. Like, that's where I end tier 1. Tier 1 stops at Jake DeGrom, right, for me. And then anyone below that were guys who were still very, very good. Like, guys who could easily be in tier 1 and probably were in tier 1 for large chunks of last year, but whether it was sticky stuff affecting their game at the end of the year, injuries, maybe they played on bad teams, so they didn't get a lot of run support, like stuff like that, right? Like Sandy Alcantara from the Miami Marlins is someone who I love this year. Like, I have him at 8 in my overall rankings, but I think there's a real chance that Sandy can be maybe like a top 4 or even top 3 guy this year if things break his way just like a little better, right? Like he last year we saw someone who had a ridiculous fastball, 98 miles an hour. He throws the ball a lot because, again, he's on bad teams. Not a lot of guys behind him in the bullpen because the Marlins stink. He has a very good slider. He has a pretty good changeup. It clicked in the second half of the year, and I just he didn't throw the slower breaking pitches as much and focus on the fastball. I really like Sandy Alcantara from the Miami Marlins, so I'm gonna try and target him in a lot of drafts this year. Mm-hmm. And someone else I really like, Andy, who I'm keeping in the top 10, is Julio Urias from the Dodgers. Like, obviously, Walker Buehler is, like, the guy there. I think Clayton Kershaw just re-signed for one more year. But Urias is so talented, going back to when he closed out the World Series in 2020. I love his game. And I think the only concern with him is the workload, right? Like, I think there's a real chance he gets a bump in innings, and maybe there's some injury risk there, right? But again, you know what? With any pitcher who goes over, you know, a year-over-year workload bump, I think there's probably always that injury risk that exists. So, you know, you take that with a grain of salt, I suppose. But if he does get injured, he is going to be great. Like, he's going to be absolutely fantastic. So Urias and Alcantara are two guys I'm targeting. And then, if you want to, like, after that, it's like Shane Bieber. It was really only injury that has him that low, right? It's same with Jake DeGrom. And, you know, we can talk about Robbie Ray as well. But Robbie Ray going to a different team, how much does that change? And honestly, on the other side of that things, how much does Kevin Gausman going to the Blue Jays change things? Because Toronto and the AL East, generally speaking, tons of home runs in the AL East, right?
Well, that's it. And Shane Bieber's the guy I want to be keeping an eye on for Cleveland. Latest report 10 days ago, he's fully healthy.
That's
throwing
good.
All is good. This guy was an absolute stud 2 years ago, Sean.
Yeah, he was great.
Man, like that dude, he 10K plus per start club. Like that, if you get that guy healthy who's still young, I think Shane Bieber is somebody, like you said, maybe falls into that, maybe not out of tier one, but not top of mind. 26 years old and healthy, I think, and it's a pretty soft division overall. in the AL Central. So I think Shane Bieber is somebody I really want to keep an eye on there.
Don't forget,
you
though,
said
Andy,
Bueller.
There's a chance, they were saying, there's a chance that Bieber gets traded this year. Apparently they're dangling him, like with the Jose Ramirez rumors. Mm. And I know all Blue Jays fans want to see Jose Ramirez come to Toronto. Don't get me wrong, I want that too. But apparently the Guardians are dangling both Bieber and Ramirez to other teams, like to get some like hefty trade compensation. Will it happen? Who knows, right? Mm. But if he's available, can't you see like a good team going out? I mean, you mentioned he's 26. The guy's really good. Even if he was injured last year, he had the torn rotator cuff. But like you said, completely healthy. If other teams feel like that, it's worth it. He might be on a different team this year, which is crazy to say.
It could, right? And the question is when? Is it before? Do they wait to the deadline? What does that look like? For a Shane Bieber type, right? And yeah, the Robbie Ray situation is always tricky. And I think where you look at it when you have a guy coming off of the year Robbie Ray did, and I don't think it's fair to say it's a one-off, right? Because we saw him totally revamped with Pete Walker and the Blue Jays, and it just seems like he's got it figured out. Now, does leaving the Jays and Pete Walker, does that change anything now that he has those tools going to Seattle? We're going to have to see. So I put him in a different category than the one-off, right? Like where you have a guy who's like not very good and then has a great year and then goes to a different team and you overvalue him. So I think he's beyond that. But I don't know. I'm still a little skeptical maybe him leaving Toronto where he had so much success and really sort of revamped and honed his craft going back out west to Seattle.
I think so. I have Ray as the 10th overall pitcher, starting pitcher available. And I think that's, I'm okay with that because I think he was the 9th starting pitcher at the end of last season, depending on, I guess it depends on your league, right? But he was right around that ranking last season. Obviously won the Cy Young, won me a healthy bit of money too, because I bet on him when he was like plus 3,000. It was great. so thank you, Robbie Ray, for your contributions both to the Blue Jays and to my wallet. I appreciate it. But with Ray too, like what makes up for leaving Toronto and maybe being on a team that might not be as good, although I expect the Mariners to be okay this year, is very simply he is going to the West, right? He's going to that division. I don't think they're going to be as, it's not as home run crazy as the AL East is, which probably, dare I say, is probably the most home run crazy division in all of baseball. And the home park, like where it's not Safeco. I always forget what the Seattle park is called now, but formerly called Safeco, whatever it's called now. It's not as, that park itself is not home run crazy as well, like Toronto is, or like Dunedin is certainly, or like a Salem Field in Buffalo is. So I would say even if he does regress a teensy bit, which I think you can probably expect, it's not going to be so harsh, and his confines might help mitigate that. So that's why I'm okay with maybe like my and large keeping him at the place he was when he ended the season.
I think that's fair, and it could be where, you know, he comes out and continues what he was doing.
That too. Yeah.
Right. So it's all about that value thing. So I want to pick the brain of our guy, Garion Thorne, fantasy baseball writer, analyst, the professor of fantasy baseball. He's an encyclopedia. If you want your fantasy baseball quick tips, folks, you're going to want to stay tuned. Our guy, Garion Thorne from DraftKings, is going to join us next. So we'll talk to him about that. Where do you value these aces, these starting pitchers, with the fact that we see so many starters go fewer innings, more committees, more mid relievers, and what about the closers too? We see so many committees there at the end of ball games. So we'll talk to Garion about the pitching side and some Blue Jays talk as well when the Fantasy Show continues across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This is the Fantasy Show with Andy McNamara and Show Ali on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back and rolling along on the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm Andy McNamara. That's Show Ali. Give us a follow on Twitter, please. We need it. We need your approval on social media, or we wither away and die. At AndyMC81, at SNSLE, at the Fantasy Show. We need it, right, Show? We need that approval.
I know. Andy will do, I'm not kidding, anything for you to like a tweet of his. Just
that's
L.
Correct.
Anyway,
well, especially
there's no shame at all.
Especially the 1.1 million plus impressions I got from burying the former Johnny Football, burying, digging the grave, and burying Johnny Manziel. So thank you for all liking that one, etc. But fantasy baseball is back because MLB finally figured their bleep out, and the season's going to happen. We talked about some starting pitching, some rankings, getting ready in those tiers, but I wanted to have our guy, Garion Thorne, fantasy baseball writer, analyst from DraftKings, to come on and help break this down for us, because there's few that break it down better than Garion, and we welcome him in now. Garion, how you doing, brother?
Oh, guys, I'm doing so good. I couldn't think of better circumstances to come talk to you. Like you said, Andy, we got baseball back. We know there's going to be 162, and now we can actually start breaking this down. So I am very excited. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Absolutely, man, absolutely. So we were talking about the pitching side of it, and I wanted to get your thoughts because it is becoming increasingly rare where you get a traditional, you go back 10 years, you get a traditional stud ace who's going to give you 7-8 innings, 12 strikeouts, and you're on your way. We're seeing so many more situations where it's, going 4 or 5 innings, and it becomes tougher and tougher to pick up those true aces for your fantasy team. What value do you put on getting one of the increasingly rare aces in your fantasy draft?
I think there's a lot of value. It's an interesting situation that's only going to be exacerbated by the fact that we have a shorter than usual spring training time, and you might see teams sort of navigate the first month, first 6 weeks of the season a little differently than they would under normal circumstances. We might see pitchers only throw 4-5 innings for their first couple starts of the season if everyone's, just trying to keep things a little safer than usual. I think someone like Zach Wheeler, I think, is a great example of a pitcher who you can draft relatively early. I mean, he is one of the quote-unquote top guys in baseball this season. But, in a 12-man league, you're getting him towards the back end of the second round, maybe even the start of the third round. And he's someone who maybe doesn't have the raw strikeout upside of some of the guys who are going in that same tier, whether that be, Garrett Cole or Corbin Burns or Max Scherzer. But what Wheeler has done the last 3 seasons is just pitch more innings than anyone else. And, I'm getting old. My tendencies in drafts are starting to change, and there is just a certain tantalizing nature to someone like Wheeler, that archetype where you can just say, hey, this guy's going to throw 200 innings. And, to your point, Andy, 10 years ago, that wasn't all that impressive a feat. It's a pretty impressive feat now. So you can take a look at some of these guys who maybe don't have the most jaw-dropping statistics, but if they bring that volume, if they are a consistent 200-inning eater, that's a huge value, and that's just something we don't see a lot anymore.
Yeah, well, especially, Garion, with the way baseball has trended, with bullpens being used more and starters getting the early hooks and so on, if you can get a guy who still produces like someone like Zach Wheeler does, and who is not necessarily always going deep into games, then I think I 100% agree with you. I had said to Andy, because I think we can all agree that guys like Garrett Cole and Corbin Burns and so on are going to be as good as they were last year, barring injury. Someone who I think can make the jump into the top tier, I'm really high on him, is Sandy Alcantara from the Marlins. Where are you at on Alcantara's ability to use that 98-mile-an-hour fastball and maybe take the next step into maybe tier one, let's call it, this year?
Yeah, Alcantara's a really interesting guy because he's someone who's been around longer than I think a lot of people are willing to admit, because maybe they only jumped on to their radar last season in that, incredible run he had with the Marlins. And he's also someone who, when you watch him pitch, and as you were talking about, his stuff is dynamic. It is arguably within like the top 5% of the league when you just line up his pitch selection, but it hasn't necessarily translated into him being an elite strikeout pitcher as of yet. Even last season, and again, he was one of the rare guys who went over 200 innings, so he does check that box right away. he only struck out 8.8 guys per nine innings, which, again, is pretty good. But considering where the league's hitting has gone in recent decades and how high the league strikeout rate is in general, you know, it's not all that impressive. However, you look at some of the underlying statistics from last season, he still had a 13.3% swinging strike rate, which is among the league's best. I mean, I think there's still some room to grow here with Alcantara, and it makes sense because, again, when you watch him pitch, the stuff is just so dirty. So, you know, he's taken a reasonable price bump from where we've seen him in years past. I mean, he is a consensus top 50 pick in NFBC formats so far, but I'm with you. I do really like him because not only do you have that strikeout upside that could continue to grow, but that base, that innings volume, I think is something you can also count on him for. And again, that's just going to be really important this season.
In conversation with Gary and Thorne, fantasy baseball writer and analyst for DraftKings on Twitter at Gary and Thorne. So, Gary, we talk about the starter side, and that's a tricky navigation depending how you want to format your team, your draft, where you pick. What do we do about closers, my man? What do we do there? Because that is as tricky, if not more so, with all the committees. Like, it is becoming, I think it was, what, last year there was nine closers who had 30-something saves, like it, which was down from like 15 or 20 a couple years prior. Like, it is just becoming increasingly rare to have those true closer shutdown guys who, you know, if there's a save opportunity, that guy's coming in all the time. Just so many more committees.
Yeah, and that's one of those issues, too, that has really just gone to the next level when you consider the lockout and how that's pushed back so much of free agency. There's still a bunch of relievers who are sitting there waiting to sign and are just licking their chops at screwing up a bullpen situation that you think you already have a pretty good handle on. So what we've seen in response to that is some of the relievers where we just come into this season with no questions beyond can they stay healthy, which obviously is the question you have to ask of every pitcher. But Liam Hendricks, Josh Hader, Rossiel Iglesias, they're going so high in drafts right now. Emmanuel Clase A is also kind of in that tier because we just know what that situation is. So I think more than ever you have to go into drafts with a definitive strategy about what you want to do at closer, particularly if you're someone who's going to be drafting tonight or in the next couple of days, because while these situations still kind of simmer, there's going to be some movement and there's going to be some question marks. Now, that does create a situation where you can still jump on value late. You can have some hunches maybe, but I think at the end of the day, the two most important things to think about when you're trying to formulate your own path when it comes to closers is know your league. It's boring, but you have to understand how these players function within the format and within the setting of your league. If you're in a smaller league, if you're in a 10 or a 12 man league, maybe you don't have to jump at the first opportunity to grab one of these guys because there are going to be hypothetically 30 of them at any given time getting saves, as opposed to a 14 or a 15 man league. Also, I think you have to know yourself. If you're an owner who is somewhat passive, if you're someone who likes to kind of, you know, Ronco style, set it and forget it, you draft your team and maybe you're not the most attentive week to week, day to day guy on the waiver wire, because saves, unlike steals, they're almost the inverse. They're going to become available at some point. I mean, whether it's at the trade deadline, whether it's just inconsistency from a particular player, there are currently guys out there whose names we might not even know who are going to rack up saves this season. So if you're someone who is a very attentive fantasy baseball owner, I think you can maybe ease up a little bit in drafting someone in the second or third or fourth round as your reliever, because you know you're going to be able to find those saves later. It's just a matter of planning ahead in that sense.
You know, Gary, I want to ask you a little bit about some of the older relievers out there, the guys we've been talking about for years and years and years, like Aroldis Chapman, Craig Kimbrell, and Kenley Jansen, right, are three players we have watched in baseball for, it feels like forever, honestly. I believe Kenley Jansen is still a free agent, unless something came across the timeline in the last couple of hours while Andy and I were on the air. I feel like he's still a free agent, and otherwise Chapman with the Yankees and Kimbrell with the White Sox. What do you do with these old vets, right? I mean, again, I think if Jansen is still a free agent, you have to wait to see where he lands, certainly. But where are you at on Chapman at this point? I know he's still probably a top 10 reliever, but at the same time, like you're kind of talking about, it's so much easier to get a reliever later in drafts that I feel like you can probably just wait and get a Taylor Rogers later or a Gregory Soto or a Michael Kopech. I know people are higher on him this year, instead of spending up on a Chapman or a Jansen or a Kimbrell maybe.
Yeah, I mean, those three in particular, when it comes to Kenley, I know there is some speculation, sort of like, you know, the Clayton Kershaw deal we just saw, that Kenley's probably just going to end up back in Los Angeles. And, you know, that would make a lot of sense. And he's someone who I think his postseason struggles have maybe put a magnifying glass on his regular seasons, which actually haven't been that bad as of late. But, yeah, it's definitely going to be a situation where you have to, again, see where some of these guys fall. I think Chapman is kind of an interesting case study because he is still an absolute dominant force when it comes to strikeout rate. But, you know, we did see last season in that Yankee bullpen that someone like Jonathan Loaisiga is immensely talented and is kind of like a rising star on that team. And, you know, if Chapman, I would say I'd never had the thought process in the last 5 years that Aroldis Chapman could ever lose his job in season. Now with Loaisiga sitting there, I mean, I don't think it would take too much more than 4 or 5 bad appearances or shaky appearances for maybe that team to go with someone like Loaisiga. So, yeah, I'm generally more of a sit back and wait, find some cheaper guys. You know, I think someone like Lucas Sims of the Reds, I know that bullpen is still kind of in flux right now. And even Sims came in and reportedly had some elbow issues. He says he's fine. I guess I'll take the player's word on that one. But, you know, he's someone who had like a 39% strikeout rate last season and is currently going outside the top 250 picks because there is a little bit of uncertainty there. So I think you can find guys. I wouldn't be paying up for some of those older names just because they're recognizable, because maybe the stranglehold they've had on those jobs in years past, I don't quite feel as strongly about this season.
Well, and Gary, that's a great point you bring up, the name recognition, which, pick your sport, so many fantasy players fall into. Oh, yeah, that name. Oh, he's got to be good, right? The name just pops off, and it's like, yeah, he's got to be good. So you have to track that. Another name, a guy who is definitely still really good, but I want to get your thoughts on where you're at on the pitching side of Shohei Ohtani, because he's awesome, but he could also just easily be, we saw it last year, he's due up for a start, and they're like, we'll put him back a couple of days. Where do you put Ohtani, the pitcher, this year?
Yeah, I mean, Ohtani is really one of the most fascinating fantasy conversations you can have, because before you even start talking about his statistics or anything along those lines, obviously you have to kind of discuss, okay, in your league, is he two people? Is he one person? Is he someone where you have to clarify on any given week or any given day that you're using him as a batter or a pitcher? Because, you know, if he's just the one person, obviously you're not going to be drafting him in a position where he's still around and you're drafting him as a pitcher, quote unquote. So I think he's kind of fascinating as a starter because, you know, there are concerns about his workload, obviously, but, you know, as we seemingly have been talking about this entire show, there's a lot of concerns about volume for a lot of pitchers, not helped by this really condensed spring training. So 130 innings last season, he's an elite strikeout pitcher. That splitter is devastating. One of the higher whiff rates on that pitch that we've seen or we saw last year. And his second half was just absolutely dominant on the mound. I look at Ohtani and, you know, depending on where you can get him in drafts, I think there is like sort of a glut of these pitchers where they're probably only going to max out at 150, 160 innings anyway. So if your big knock on Ohtani as you're doing your own assessment is, oh, he's not going to throw enough innings, I think you kind of have to reassess what a decent sample of innings are anyway in 2022, because he's not actually that far behind.
Gary, before we let you go, I do have to ask you about the Blue Jays. And, of course, spring training opens today. It's happening right now down in Dunedin, Florida, which is very exciting. Tons of players arriving at the facilities. Yusei Kikuchi signing a three-year, $36 million deal yesterday. I'm sure the Jays are not done. You know, we want to see if/when they do something at second base or third base. But I'm curious, like, let's say right now the roster in the infield is the way they go into the season, right? Kevin Biggio, let's just say for the sake of argument, is a second baseman, and Santiago Espinal or some kind of platoon is at third base going forward. How does that affect the fantasy value, or maybe even the real life value, the everyday value of someone like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, if considering they lost Marcus Semien, right? Like, even if George Springer is completely healthy, does the loss of Semien affect the output, the offensive output from someone like Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette?
I don't think it would be too much of a downfall for those two particular players. Now you're paying the tax for last season already. I mean, we're seeing both of those guys as consensus top 10 picks in most drafting formats right now. And I think, as we can all attest, when you're drafting with your buddies in Toronto, you're going to be paying the Toronto tax on those two guys too. So you're going to have to take them exceedingly high in drafts. And I think Bichette in particular is kind of an interesting case study here, because we know his batting average can fluctuate a little bit. He's a very streaky hitter. So the highs are very high and the lows are very low, although he does bring that stolen base upside that Vladimir Guerrero Jr. does not bring. So there is five cap potential there with someone like Bo Bichette. But, you know, to your point, the reason the top half of this Jays lineup was so productive from a fantasy sense last year was the ability to rack up runs and RBI just through osmosis, just through people being on base as often as they were. And maybe the lineup doesn't flip over quite as much as it did last season, if that is truly the way the Jays are going to go into this. But their top five hitters are still so good and so much brimming with so much potential that I think Bichette and Guerrero, who are still going to have, as you mentioned, George Springer hitting ahead of them more often than not, I think that'll be enough for their capping stats, particularly Guerrero, who's going to have, you know, Springer and Bichette ahead of him. So I'm fine with both those guys. I would say, again, that Bichette just being like the fifth overall pick is still something that is kind of crazy, just his rapid ascension in terms of fantasy baseball. So you're paying top dollar for both of these players right now coming off career seasons, but it's hard to argue against the ceiling that both of those guys possess.
Gary, never enough time, man. Thank you so much for stopping by, and tell people where they can find your work. You're doing a lot of basketball as well.
Yeah. Just follow me at Gary and Thorne. Check out the DK Playbook where you can read all of my articles. Yeah, we're doing finishing up the basketball season strong right now, but obviously going to have a lot of baseball content moving forward. So, yeah, check out DK Playbook, and follow me at Gary and Thorne.
Great stuff, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
See you guys then.
All right, there he is, Gary and Thorne, as he said, from DraftKings, and on Twitter at Gary and Thorne. Great baseball mind and some interesting basketball work as well. And I think it's a great point he brings up, Show, where do you want to pay top dollar for players who are at their peak? And we get so caught up sometimes on value. I think maybe at times we overlook just the simple solution of like, well, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., if healthy, is going to be an absolutely incredible star. So don't overthink it. Go get him if he's there.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think you're right. People always think to themselves, well, if I take this guy, I can make up the production later. And you know what? That is valid. It's not a wrong way to look at it. But at the same time, wouldn't you rather just have Laddie Jr. watch him crank 50 bombs again?
More dingers.
Dingers, right? So I feel like if that's what you can get, you take it, right? It's the same kind of argument. Exactly. It's the same kind of thing you get with Juan Soto, with Ronald Acuña Jr. Maybe people might be spooked a little by the knee injury, but he looks like he's fully healthy, and he's a freak too, right? Fernando Tatis. It's just like any of those top guys, the consensus top guys, yes, you are paying up for them, but they are going to be very good. And I feel like something maybe with baseball too, more than football, because you know, you only watch your football players play once a week. If you have a Tatis or an Acuña or a Vladdy or a Bichette or a Soto, you're watching them basically every day, right? Like, you're watching them, like, in a seven-day week, you're going to watch them, what, like, six times and probably, most times 7 days, right? So I think that's, like, an underrated part of fantasy baseball is that you just get to watch your favorite players all the time, which is kind of why I try and pick players from a variety of teams, just so I can more fun factor, let's put it that way.
Right, keeps it spread out. And I maintain, show that one of the key strategies to fantasy baseball is if you pay attention, you will make the playoffs.
Yeah,
that's it. If you may, I say this every year to people, if you just pay attention and set your lineup every day, I get into a routine during baseball season, which I love: morning coffee, tinker with my lineup, done. You do that every day, because people go on every year, oh, I went on vacation, I forgot that. Well, that's your problem. I'm going to beat you when you're on vacation, right? If you just pay attention, you will make the playoffs. That's it.
And hey, don't forget, at sportsnet.ca, and I think it's fantasy.sportsnet.ca is what the link was last year. We're going to do the Listener League again for the Sportsnet pick'em pool, right? Where the players with the different different point values, and you fill out your lineup, kind of like a pseudo DFS thing. It's a lot of fun, and we'll probably do that again once the season kicks off at the beginning of April. So look out for that, because you can participate that way as well, right here on the Fantasy Show.
Yep, lots of prizes and all that. So we'll keep you up to date with all that good stuff there. There you go, people. All right, so we'll continue our fantasy baseball rankings next Sunday at the same time. Lots of fantasy football, fantasy wrestling as well. Great show. For Santos, for show, I'm Andy. You've been listening to the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Do you want to know the terrifying truth? Or do you want to see me sock a few dingers?
Dingers! 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 Dingers!